This is LTN Rewind, a classic pulled from the Love Thy Nerd archives.
This is Humans of Gaming, an open and honest conversation about games, life, and belief.
Hello and welcome to the Humans of Gaming podcast. I'm your host, Chief Content Nerd of Love Thy Nerd, and I'm here with my co-host, Chris Gwaltney.
Hey, I'm here.
What's your role? What's your title?
Chief Executive Nerd. I like our titles.
Yeah, they're
You're
okay.
Not sold yet, huh?
I think we should see.
What do I do to get you over the hump?
We should see if any of our listeners want to give us feedback. Send your feedback to drew@lovethynerd.com and chris@lovethynerd.com and tell us if you like those titles. But we have a special, we have two special guests on the podcast. I feel a little bit bad about, because I didn't ask you prior to the podcast about how to pronounce your last name, but I'm here with Patrick and Kat. Do you go by Pat though, Patrick?
No, normally, yeah, we talk Pat and Kat, and it's Lysite, like Lysite, but with an L in front, just spelled Lysite. Totally different.
Yeah, Lysite. Am I saying it right?
Yep.
Lysite. Okay, cool. And so you guys are the owners, directors, operators of Chara Games. Is how would you define Chara. Your roles? Chara.
Chara Games.
Oh, I'm for two.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So we are the company. It's the two of us. There's nobody else.
What are your guys' titles? Do you have cool titles like we do?
A president and designer are kind of the working exhibit badge
names. Boring.
But he has business cards and I don't.
Wow.
So who's the president and who's the designer?
So officially I'm the president.
And which makes me the designer, but that's definitely backwards because he's the primary designer. But I don't think Good Idea Fairy really fits on a business card.
It's a lot more interesting, though.
Hey, I think that's great, man. I'm all for weird titles like that. I think it's great.
Yeah, I like Good Idea Fairy a lot. That's really strong, actually. I feel like I could use one of those, like, could we bring you on as, like, a consultant for Humans of Gaming and Love Thy Nerd as like a, we can call on you to be our good idea person. Nerd? You can keep fairy.
I think we can pay you exactly $9 per hour.
Awesome. That's what I'm making now.
Cool.
But we'll get you a business card with a cool title on it.
Yeah. So. Oh, you know, we'll double what you're making currently. How's that?
Yeah. Double so tell us about Chara Games, which I almost did mispronounce.
Yep. So our mission is to build games that create joy by developing relationships with God and people. So we believe that joy in life, that the enduring kind of joy, not the joy that's dependent on happiness. That's what Chara means. It's the Greek word for enduring joy, and it's based on relationships, our relationship with other people and our relationship with God. And so we try to make board and card games. We're on the analog side of gaming, so we make board and card games that allow you to sit around a table and develop those relationships. And so each of our games explores a Christian topic, but does it from a standpoint that's open to anyone of any faith background. And we have kind of two main goals. One is that a person of any background can sit down and play the game and have fun and maybe, you know, get exposed to something they wouldn't normally encounter, but can engage with it at the level that they want to or not. And then for a Christian, you can sit down and play our game and learn something about history or about a given topic that you probably wouldn't encounter in the normal course of an American church kind of life. And so it becomes an avenue to explore through gaming some really interesting stuff that we just don't encounter.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So can you give us an example of like something that someone might learn from one of your games, maybe one that you're proud of that, you know, a game that you're proud of that you feel like teaches players something they wouldn't have known otherwise?
So the thing that I would comment on is Commissioned, our first game. It's a big box game. The board is two-sided. On the first side of the board, you're going to go through four different scenarios that are all covered in the Book of Acts. So most Christians are exposed to that level of church history.
It's early church history, the first 100, 150 years.
Right. But the back side of the board covers a scenario that is after Acts, but before Christianity becomes the state church or approved religion of the Roman Empire. So between, say, 100 AD and 300 AD, how far does Christianity spread? And I'm asking that not, you know, I actually want to know, do you know how far it spread?
Do I?
Yeah.
I feel like I should because I've been to seminary.
But we don't. The average Christian doesn't know how far Christianity spread before 300 AD.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the face of persecution, right? So this is working against the grain. And so the scenario explores the fact that Thomas took the gospel out to India by 57 AD. Andrew goes around the Black Sea through parts of Russia. Another disciple took the gospel down the Nile River Valley to Ethiopia, and the disciples of Peter and Paul had taken the gospel through Spain and across all of Western Europe, and that's by about 200 AD, well before Christianity makes any kind of political inroads into the Roman Empire. So this is massive spread, very early and against the grain.
And this is something that I had been a Christian for almost 20 years and didn't know. And it was in doing the research for this game and trying to develop scenarios for this game that I went through some church history stuff and was reading a book for my own edification that I realized, oh my goodness, the church basically covered the known world within 200 years. And that's astounding. And how is this not common knowledge within modern Christianity?
And whether you believe in, you know, if you're a Christian or if you don't, what the church did massively changed the face of Western civilization. And so there's this whole movement that so much of our history is predicated on, that whether you're a Christian or not, we just don't know because we don't discuss it.
Right. So I have a question. I mean, Kat, you kind of maybe alluded to this, but before you guys dove in on Commission, I mean, were you already kind of church history buffs, or did that kind of come out of making the game?
We were in a Sunday school class that was doing church history.
And I had just done a graduate level class on church history. And so the two things just kind of came together.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. So I'm curious about how you go about, presenting that sort of subject, because I find it fascinating, but I'm also like a Christian and have a background in pastoral ministry, and I've been to seminary and that sort of thing. So I find those sort of things fascinating. How do you present that in a sort of way? Because you mentioned this earlier, to players in a way that's going to be interesting to them. Because I think some people like hear, and maybe you can't do much about that, because some people hear church or Christianity, church history, the Bible, Acts, they hear those words and they're just like, oh, well, pass. But one of the goals of your company, obviously, is to make games that are interesting and going to be something that people outside the Christian faith would want to play. So I'm curious of how you approach that.
So I think a lot of it for us boils down to, in the design process, we work very hard to preserve the free will of players to act in the way they decide. So our games aren't going to tell you how to think. They are simply going to put you in a situation and ask you to solve a problem. And so, for example, in Commissioned, you each work together with different characters that represents characters from the early church. But each of you has a unique skill that the team needs to work together to solve the historical problem, be it religious persecution or government oppression or natural disasters that the early church faced. So it's a historic slant, and it just immerses you in that situation and gives you a different challenge to solve in each problem. And so it's not going to, you know, immerse you in the theology that's going on. It's putting you in the, right, in the scenario and saying, can you make decisions that will solve the problems that the church had to solve at the time to accomplish what they accomplished? And in the course of playing the game, you may encounter some of the things that or you will encounter some of the things that the church faced, but it's not going to tell you this is the right way to think about it, or this is even the right thing to do, because you're going to encounter different things that force you to make decisions on your own. And we wanted the players to have the freedom to make whatever choices they wanted in that situation and see how it would play out against the historical backdrop. And so there is no necessarily right answer for the situation that you're in. The trials are going to come out in different order each time. You're going to face kind of different situation based on the decisions that you make. And so you kind of let that play out. You leave it up to the player to engage. And we provide a book, a companion book to the game that has all the information on this is what the actual historical events were. Or scriptural ties. So if you want to go to that level of engagement, you can. But if you just want to sit down and play the game for an hour and have fun and solve a tough historical problem, then you can do that. And so it's not preachy or in your face in the way that too many Christian games approach things.
I think he answered the whole thing well, but didn't answer your actual question, which was how do you make it fun?
We need to have more married couples on, I think.
So I think the way that it is fun is you are constantly facing the opportunity of loss. Mm-hmm. So every single trial, because the way the game works is you flip over a trial card, and then now as a team, we have to figure out how to overcome that. So every turn, it's, you know, my church is being fed to the lions. How are you guys going to help me out? Okay. Now there's been an argument in the mission team and our team has to split up and that affects what we're trying to do. So how are we going to overcome that? So every turn there's this, we're facing loss. We're facing a new problem that keeps the gameplay fresh.
The other thing is mechanically, we've done some interesting things, from an effort to be innovative within the cooperative game space of board gaming. So a big problem they have is quarterbacking or alpha gamer, where one player tries to play.
A big problem in cooperative games. And when we talk about cooperative games, obviously I think a lot of our listeners will know this, but we're talking about a team game where you as a group are playing a board game against the board itself, like against, right?
Yeah. Right. And you either all win or you all lose. But one player can kind of take over and play everybody's turn for them. In this game, it's built so that there are some decisions that each player has to make on their own. And there are some team decisions that either you will get the chance to talk about, or because communication in that century was bad, maybe you won't. And so there are some other things that can happen to interrupt. And so it keeps the players engaged in every turn, participating in every turn, but not necessarily cooperating in every turn based on how the messages kind of shake out. And so that's some interesting things going on in terms of the actual design of the game to keep it unique and fresh as compared to other cooperative games that are on the market.
Well, that's what I appreciate about your two games that I've played. You know, you guys are talking about commissioned, and the way I always explain commissioned to people is it's reverse pandemic with a deck builder.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think people get that. And what I appreciate about what you guys do is that you innovate, I think, on kind of well-established sort of mechanics or whatever in the board gaming world. You know, the other one that I'm referencing too is Unauthorized, which is kind of this social deduction game. But unlike other social deduction games I've played, your allegiance can actually change. Right. Whereas all other social deduction games I've played, like, you know, you're the werewolf at the beginning and you're the werewolf at the end. Like, it doesn't change. Or yeah. Right. We've been playing Secret Hitler lately. I don't know if you guys have played that.
No, I've seen it, but not played it.
Yeah. Oh, it's a blast. I absolutely love it. There's nothing more gratifying than like shouting at your friends that they're fascists.
So the other thing that we were very excited about with Unauthorized was the ability to create a social deduction and influence game that an introvert is not at an immediate disadvantage. You know, when I sit down to play Coup or Resistance, I'm quiet. And so I'm immediately a suspect. People are going to kill me in the first round just because I say nothing. That's not because I'm guilty or anything like that. It's just because I'm quiet. But the card-based gameplay that enables the loyalty shifting in Unauthorized also enables an introvert to be at an even footing with the extrovert.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting because I had that same problem when we played Secret Hitler the other day. I got killed in our first game just because like and I'm kind of in between. Like, I call myself an ambivert because I feel like I don't fit either category.
Yeah.
But it was a brand new game for me, so I'm just kind of being quiet, trying to figure it out. It's the first time I played, and boom, I was killed. But when I played Unauthorized, that's probably the thing I thought was most interesting about it, is the whole time you're sort of hedging your bets about which side you should side with. And at times you feel really strongly, and that can change actually pretty quickly, which is fun too. So you may find yourself at one point arguing really strongly for one side and trying to get that side to kind of go over the edge. And then a couple turns later, you know, a turn later, you're like, oh man, no, I have to campaign really hard for the other side, which is a really unique mechanic I've never seen in a game.
Yeah.
But I'd be curious to hear, like, So obviously your games deal with religious subject matter, and it sounds like, you know, they deal with them in this way that I think is accessible to people outside of Christianity. Have you gotten any feedback from people who, you know, non-Christian folks who've played your games? What have they said?
We get a lot of feedback from all different sides. Kind of counterintuitively, we get more negative feedback from Christians than we do from non-Christians.
It's funny that it's not counterintuitive. Like, we think that should be counterintuitive, but unfortunately, that seems to be the norm.
Yeah, no, people in general are surprised by our games because they're actually good games that are fun to play. And that just tells you how low we as Christians have set the bar for designing games. But no, yeah. In all seriousness, we do get a lot of people that are, you know, appreciate the effort that we've taken to do games that approach these themes in a way that is accessible. Because, you know, there are board and card games about pretty much everything under the sun except anything that deals with religion. It's like the third rail, and I don't really understand why. Except for maybe it's just too emotionally charged. And so we try very hard in our games as we're, you know, designing them and testing them with people of different backgrounds to make sure that it's fair, that it's a representative viewpoint to what's being discussed. Like in our new game, Soul of the Empire, we've got four different factions, right? We've got a Roman faction, a Jewish faction, a Christian faction, and then a faction of outside cultures from the first century, Germanic tribes, Goths, and Parthians. And in that game, as we were designing it, we really wanted to present those factions not as they're viewed by history, i.e. the victor, Rome, but as they viewed themselves in that time. And it gives you the freedom to explore what they were trying to do, how they were trying to do it, and why they were trying to do it from a neutral stance or from a internal stance as opposed to an external stance. So it's not that the game is not judging any of those factions. It is simply putting you into those factions and allowing you to make your own, to draw your own conclusions about them as a faction as you play.
So I do want to hear you guys' story. It's usually how we start this podcast, but yeah. So tell us, like, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Connecticut. My wife grew up in Southern California.
You tell your story. I'll tell mine. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. So I grew up in Connecticut, and then we met in Colorado, and we've lived in a lot of different places at this point. We kind of got into gaming a little bit later, but I'll let you tell your story first.
Well, I have to ask, what do you mean by my story? Are you asking for my testimony or just asking for...
No, I mean, yeah, where you grew up, what was it like?
Okay, yeah. I grew up in Southern California. I was born in Orange, grew up in Riverside, and went to high school in Norco.
Okay.
Land of the horse and the cow.
There are more horses than people in Norco, California.
Yay.
it's a unique little niche right in the middle of, you know, it's city from the ocean to the desert, but right there in Norco, the minimum, you know, plot line is a half an acre and you're not allowed to have sidewalks because the horses need their trails. And it's just a unique little town. It was,
yeah. Did you ride horses? Did you like grow up doing that?
Yes and no. I did not own horses, but my neighbors did. So I got a fair amount of exposure.
That's probably the way to go, because then you don't have to like pay for it and take care of it and stuff, but you can still have the fun of riding it.
All the benefits with none of the responsibilities.
Right, exactly. It was great.
It's my kind of jam.
That's what I tell my kids about dogs. I'm like, our neighbors have those.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And then I went off to college and met this guy.
Yep.
And I was not introduced to games as a child. You know, we did Candyland, I think was really the only game we had in my house.
Which is awful.
It was awful.
Right.
I've been having to, my wife bought that for my girls and I've been having to play it recently.
So the game that you need to play is Run for Your Life Candyman by Smirk and Dagger. Now that is a fun game.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Best played at Christmas with gingerbread cookies that you can use and eat as nice. You play the game.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Phenomenal. At any rate, Patrick and I met in college, and he had grown up playing games with his brother. So he, of course, then introduced me to games. But we're talking heavy military strategy games, which I have zero expertise in.
Axis and Allies?
Diplomacy is actually where we started and almost where we stopped. It almost ended our marriage before it began. It was quite an interesting game.
Dude, I get it, man. Biggest one of the biggest fights me and Ashley ever had was over Settlers of Catan. I had to like leave the house and go for a walk. I always have to tell her like, hey, we aren't married when we're playing games. Like, what we've got going is a good thing. Like, it does not exist on the island of Catan or anything else. But for some reason, that doesn't compute with her. I don't get it.
Yeah, we were playing, and Kat and I were working together against the other people that were playing, and we were doing really well, and she knew that eventually I was going to double cross her. It just happened about 2 to 3 turns before she expected it, which made it so good strategically. It was amazing. It was also probably the worst blunder I've ever made playing a board game. It was pretty brutal.
It was like 3 more years before I played the game again.
Yes.
Wow.
Painful.
That's savage.
Classic.
So before we get going too far, I'm curious for both of you guys, what you grew up like. I mean, did you guys both grow up in Christian homes or not? Like, what was that whole process like?
So for me, excuse me, my dad grew up in a Catholic home and my mom grew up in a Methodist home. They got married and they could not agree on a church.
Mm.
So I was unchurched until I was about 8 years old. My best friend took me off to Awana. I actually got saved at an Awana church camp.
Which is like a kids program.
Yep.
In church. Yeah.
It's a, yeah, exactly. And, then I continued to be unsaved because that friend moved or continued to be unchurched until I was mid high school when my best friend took me off to her youth group, which is a children's program or a teen program at a church. And at that point I was baptized and started actually attending church regularly.
My story is different. I mean, I was in a congregational church in New England. Like you think of the big white church on the top of the hill. That was my church. You know, it's in the city seal and everything there in Bristol, Connecticut. But so I did everything you could possibly do in church growing up. You know, anytime the door was open, we were there. But either I didn't hear the message of Jesus in a way that I could understand it, or they weren't saying it. I don't really know. It was the church that people went in town to be seen going to church, if you kind of hear what I'm saying. Yeah. So I went off to college and I just kind of did my own thing for about a year. Wasn't necessarily anti-Christian. I would have thought of myself as a Christian at the time. But then I realized through Kat and some of the other people I met in college that I really had no idea what the Bible actually had to say. I'd grown up with it or around it my entire life, but never had really looked into it. And so, I mean, I had no idea what the actual claims were of Christianity. And so I came to Christ in college, reasoning my way through with the help of some people who really took the time to answer my questions and, you know, wrestle with my thoughts and my doubts. And I really became a Christian and started walking that journey in the second half of college.
This is LTN Rewind, a classic pulled from the Love Thy Nerd archives. We here at LTN Radio know that not everybody is nerdy in the same ways, and you might find yourself in a situation where you hear a word or a phrase that you've never seen before and have no idea what it means. Well, have no fear. I'm here to help. Today's word is sus. Now, the game Among Us has become super popular lately, even with people who don't normally play co-op games of this nature. But even on your first game, you'll likely run into the term sus, followed by either the color or name of a character. For example, sus brown. When someone says this, they're saying that Brown is susceptible. He's vulnerable and being targeted unfairly by others in the group when there's no reason to think he's the imposter of the round. So when you see one person calling out someone else as sus, it's polite to protect and even fight for the susceptible person. Vote skip and keep that little guy in the game. And if that person survives until the next round, buddy up with them to protect them from the real imposter. Hope this helps. Come back next week for another nerdy definition.
At Diversity Today, we believe it's very easy to be a hero. All you need are honesty, empathy, respect, and open-mindedness.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's not all it takes to be a hero.
Oh, great. Well, what is a hero to you?
A hero kills people. People that wish him harm.
Okay.
A hero is part human and part supernatural. A hero is born out of a childhood trauma or out of a disaster that must be avenged.
Okay, you're thinking of a superhero.
I don't think it's any secret that things are a little tense here in America right now. In fact, all over the world. But there has currently been this giant uprising in racial awareness and diversity being something that all of us have a keen eye on. Now, it's not my intention to get into all the different political aspects surrounding this debate, but one of the things that does seem to be clear is that whether we see it or not as a society, that there are strains of racism that are still weaving their way through our country and our world. And so when we think of heroes in the terms of fighting racism, oftentimes we think of this guy.
Abraham Lincoln once said that if you're a racist, I will attack you with the North.
And I think we would all agree that Abraham Lincoln is a hero, especially in this vein. The same goes for Martin Luther King Jr., for Rosa Parks, for anyone who decided to take a stand for the community that was in need, that was struggling. And in fact, there are men and women of all races who are taking a stand, saying that enough is enough and that we need to put an end to this now. Unfortunately, there are people in different parts of the country who are in disagreement on the best way to go about this. One thing is for certain, violence should never be our first option. Empathy should always be the name of the game. Now, empathy is not sympathy. Empathy is actually just learning to feel like the other person feels, trying to figure out how they got to be who they are and why they felt that way. You can even empathize with someone who you believe is racist. Now, that doesn't mean you're condoning how they believe, but it is helping you put yourself in the mindset of how they got there, which in turn should help you minister to that person to try and turn their mind around. When we think about what a hero is, defined by the Bible, we think about God's terms laid out in Romans 15, 1 and 2. We who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. Each of us should please our neighbors for their good, to build them up. This verse describes the different characteristics of heroism: helping those in need, buttressing the weaknesses of others with our strengths and vice versa, and contributing to the welfare of our neighbors. Building people up, not tearing them down, is where change occurs. Sure, not everybody's going to change, but those that do will begin to turn the tide. Simple, one-on-one, personal, honest conversations. That's where it all starts. Because after all,
we all have a hero in our heart.
Catch a new Back Row Binge Watch every Monday on the Back Row Morning Show, exclusively on LTN Radio.
This is LTN Rewind, a classic pulled from the Love Thy Nerd archives.
So it all started with a beautiful girl. That's my story.
Here we go.
So I met Kat in spring semester of freshman year, and I was very interested in her right away. She invited me to participate in some ski trips and some other things with an on-campus ministry called InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, which actually has nothing to do with sports. It's just, you know, it's an on-campus group. And so I participated with them for a while, mostly just to spend time with Kat. But then I remember being there maybe 2 to 3 months later and realizing that I was really enjoying the group more than I was enjoying spending time with her, that there was something that the people in that group had. There was a hope and a joy that they had that I didn't have and that I needed, that I wanted. And so at that point, it kind of opened my eyes to Christianity being something other than the traditions that I had grown up with. And so that really opened the journey. And as I started to have conversations with people, they did the natural thing, which was to start asking me questions. And you know, they'd ask me questions about, like, well, what do you know about the Bible? What do you believe about Jesus? And my answer was, I don't understand why you're asking me these questions. I've been in church my whole life. That makes me a Christian, doesn't it? Question mark. Yeah. Let's start at the beginning. And so they did. And it was both friends and a couple in particular that really took me aside and led me through what following Jesus means and how it is a relationship and not a religion. And that is really what opened my eyes. And the biggest change that I noticed in me personally was that when I became a Christian, for the first time in my life, I was the same person on the outside that I was on the inside. And to explain that, like, I have always been an I's dotted, T crossed, rule obeying, straight laced person. That's just how I'm wired.
Yeah.
But that's what everybody sees on the outside. Mm. It's not who I was on the inside. Like, my first instinct was always to say or do something else, but I would check it because I would say, okay, well, that's not what I want people to think about me. What I want people to think about me is blank. And so I was this huge hypocrite that I knew that other people didn't know. And after I became a Christian, I realized that I was living free in the sense of I could, my first instinct usually is the correct one. That doesn't mean I do things right all the time, but what it means is I can live transparently and let people see me for who I am. And that's, it's just freeing to be in that situation.
Wow. Mm. So Kat, you kind of mentioned, you know, doing the youth group thing in high school and stuff. I mean, what was that process like for you? I mean, we got to hear from Pat, but.
Yeah. For my story is very much a story of friends. When I was 8, you know, my best girlfriend took me to the children's program, Awana's. When I was 16, my best girlfriend took me off to her youth group. And my something happened with my dad at that time that he came to faith and decided that the church, the family needed to be in church. And so we as a family were going to church and we as a family got baptized. That was very much my choice, but that's just the way it panned out for me. And then when I went off to college, I did my own thing for several months where I was just, you know, Sunday morning was a time to sleep. And it was, again, a friend who said, hey, I'm going to this Bible study off base. Would you like to come with me? That really drew me back into walking with Jesus. And then it was really that Bible study group where the leaders emphasized a strong foundation in the scripture and really understanding what does the Bible say? How does that impact our lives? And how do we live in obedience? And so really for me, walking with Jesus in a relationship really took root when I was in college, when I was really challenged by, okay, I know what the Bible says, but I'm not actually doing what the Bible says to do. And that's not okay. And beginning to actually walk out what I believe and what I knew to be the right thing. So for me, it's always been about the friends that have drawn me closer to God.
And so, so you guys, when did you guys get married?
Right after graduation. Graduated on Wednesday, got married on Saturday. It was a whole lot of life change.
Wow. And, how was, I'm curious of like, when, at what, how did you guys get into designing games? When did that take
okay,
place?
So my family was coming for Thanksgiving just a couple years ago, 3 years ago.
No, longer than that. It was 2013.
Sure, whatever.
12. And 12.
My brother and my sister.
That's one of those things right there. That was one of them.
It doesn't matter.
Remember I was talking about earlier.
So my brother and sister both love playing games, but they like different kinds of games. And so Patrick wanted a game that would fit both of them, that we could all four of us sit around the table and just have a fantastic time. And so
and you guys both, you guys at this point are both into board games,
yeah,
I'm assuming.
Yeah, we picked up Settlers of Catan several years before that, you know, moving, we move every couple of years. And so board games have become our way of building a social network, of building friendships. We invite people over for dinner and we're going to play a game. Whether you know anything about games or not, by the time you leave this house, you will. So we're several years into our game fun experience at this point, and Patrick decides he wants to design a game.
Yeah, I basically took Settlers of Catan and Axis and Allies and kind of mashed them together with a medieval setting and developed a different kind of, you know, a game that models both economic and military combat kind of things. And so that it actually, it was terrible at Thanksgiving. Like my poor brother and sister-in-law, they struggled through it. And, but after about 5 months, it was a decent game that was interesting. And so I reached out to a couple different publishers, one of them being Rio Grande Games, to say, you know, how do I pitch this to you? And they said, well, you need to come to a convention. And I was like, a board game convention that exists? And they're like, come to Origins in June. And I'm like, okay, I'll meet you at Origins in June. Quick, Google, what's Origins? And so I went to Ohio and went to Origins, and my eyes were just opened to the scale of modern board gaming. Like, we had,
what year was this? Sorry.
That would have been the summer of 13.
Okay.
And so that was my first show. You know, there were 15,000 people there, and people were just playing all kinds of amazing games. You know, this whole convention center was filled with people, and it was amazing. And I talked to like 10 different publishers with my game, and a publisher was interested and took my game home. And like, the whole thing was just this amazing experience. And so, you know, it was a very exciting time. I got home, and a couple months later, I was like, well, I want to do that again. Except it takes a lot of time, a lot of time, too much time. So if I'm going to do this again, I have to convince my wife to do it with me. Otherwise, she's going to be very disgruntled. And so I went
because to Kat. She didn't see you as much and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I went to Kat and I said, you know, I want to do another game. I want to do it with you. And she's like, well, okay, because I love you.
Literally, in my mind, I'm thinking, be the obedient, supportive wife. Like, this is what a good Christian wife does, right? She's supportive. And so that's how I got into game design.
But out of that, we agreed that we wanted to explore the idea of a religious game using modern board game mechanics, because we had looked around and hadn't found any. We were playing all these amazing games like Pandemic and all these other different things that we'd accumulated over the last kind of 9 months of understanding what the modern board game world was. And there was just nothing. Like, no one had attempted it.
Yeah.
And so we're like, okay, well, we'll give it a shot and see. And Commission came out of it. And really, after about 3 months, Commission was working really well. And after about 6 months, it was working so well. I was like, okay, we have got to get this to a publisher. So I went back to Origins in the summer of 2014, and I pitched it to 20 different publishers, and they all said, hey, this is a great game. It's got a lot of unique mechanic stuff going on. We like how it's tight. It's an interesting kind of gameplay, but it just won't sell. So we're going to take it and we'll strip the theme out of it and we'll make it about zombies. Does that sound good to you? It's like, well, that's not really what I was hoping to do with this game.
Yeah.
So we sat on it.
I wonder how often I bet that happens a lot when people pitch games, because right. I feel like there's a ton of games about zombies.
So many.
Well, and what we learned the first time Patrick went to Origins was go with other themes that you could reskin your game with. Yeah. Because if the market is currently flooded with medieval period games, then publishers aren't going to like a medieval themed game. And so if you can already have in your back pocket, here are some other themes that would fit easily, then you have a better chance of getting a publisher. But yeah, retheming this game wasn't in our cards.
Because the experience that we were trying to create for the player, it's so tightly tied the theme and the mechanics from the beginning that trying to reskin it at that point we would have had to start totally over to come back to a cohesive whole at the end. And so that really wasn't where we were. And so we sat on it for a while. And then all of a sudden, all of these people that I had met at Origins, not because I had sought them out, but because they saw me playing a prototype of Commissioned with Sam Healy, all of a sudden started coming to me and saying, hey, I really liked that game you had at Origins. I want to build you a website. Hey, I have a background in art history. I'd be interested in doing the art for that game. Hey, I have some digital software that I would like to see. Maybe I can incorporate this into a digital version. Like, all of these people were coming to us, you know, unasked. And so finally we're like, okay, we got it. We're going to do this as a company. Like, clearly it's resonated enough with the small audience that we've got to that there is a market for this. So we started a company, we went through all of the art production and streamlining and another round of robust play testing. And then in the summer of 2015, we went back to Origins as an exhibitor with the new company, and we launched our Kickstarter for commission while we were there. And so that was, you know, 3 years, three success, you know, Origins in a row doing this. And just, you know, it's a whole journey that had happened in that window.
What Patrick kind of glossed over was in the decision to start the company, we really felt like these people coming to us, and we had already had kind of the, should we do this ourselves question kind of niggling in the back of the mind. And when all these things started coming to us, I felt very clearly that God was saying, I'm behind this, move forward. So it was very much God showing up and us being obedient to where we believed he was leading us.
Yeah. And I'm curious, were you tempted? Because I really appreciate that you kind of stuck to your guns and made the game that you wanted to make, because I'm sure a lot of people, and not that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think a lot of people probably wouldn't and would just be like, yeah, sure, we'll reskin it and do whatever, because, you know, people have to, yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to make compromises in life. I wouldn't judge someone for doing that, but yeah, I was just curious, like, were you in that process ever tempted to go that route, or were you pretty firm and like, no, I want to make this game the way I want to make it? And
yeah, with this one, I don't think we were tempted at all. For that game, it was the story that we were telling, not the mechanics we were trying to sell. And I think that has become true for each of our games. Like, that, sure, you can swap out the themes and make this game, you know, use the mechanics to tell any story. But we have chosen a story that we want to tell and then built our mechanics to tell the story. And so to re-theme one of our games after we've designed it kind of makes our brain explode.
I think what's really cool about what you guys are trying to do and what you are doing with your games is it's kind of the way I think we've seen happen in the video game industry in the last, you know, several years, where, you know, we have more and more games that they're not just for sheer entertainment value. Like, they're deep and thoughtful and provocative. Mm-hmm. And make you think more. I mean, that's the whole point of, you know, why we're so interested in gaming. And I think what you guys are trying to push with your games, obviously in board game world, is saying, hey, like, games can be fun and they will be fun, but they can also be more. And I think it's really admirable for you guys to want to try to push the medium forward. There's always going to be games that are just entertainment, and that's great. But I think there's also a space for games that can speak about more than just entertainment.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And there's all kinds of different board games that are trying to, you know, explore that space in very different ways. Like, I'm playing this kind of mixture cross between a board game and a role playing game by Plaid Hat called Stuffed Fables right now with my kids.
Oh, I want that game. It's on my wish list.
It's amazing. It's, you know, that we're these stuffed animals trying to protect this little girl from the king of nightmares. And my kids are just, they're eating it up. But what it's really about are all of the fears and doubts and, you know, anxious things that kids experience growing up. But they get to face those things from a perspective that allows them to kind of process it and engage it. So, I mean, there's really a lot of child psychology kind of built into the game and a lot of room for discussing, you know, how does sharing affect our ability to move forward as a team? How do our choices in the moment shape our ability to respond to the bad things that happen in life? And so there are all kinds of really meaningful games out there that we can enjoy. And it's just fun to watch the industry and the hobby explore those things in unique ways.
Yeah. How old are your kids?
11 down to 2. We have four kids. So we've got a range.
Yeah. And how old are the ones playing stuffed fables? I'm just curious.
11, 9, and 6.
Nice. Okay. Trying to figure out, because that's one that's been on my list, and what you just said about it made me think. Yeah. I have a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 5-month-old. So
I would wait maybe 2 to 3 years, but then you could take your older two through it.
Did you guys play? Yeah. I forget the name of the guy that did Stuffed Fables, but he did Mice and Mystics first. Did you guys play that one by chance?
Yeah, Jerry Hawthorne, and we have Mice and Mystics. We have one of the expansions, and we have the Tail Feathers.
Yeah.
You know, kind of combat variety. So our kids, you know, we love painting the minis and we love reading the stories. Yeah. It's become a thing for us.
My wife and I, she's not super into games. Like, she'll humor me. She likes more kind of just silly, goofy games. Whereas I'm like, you know, I would play Twilight Imperium all day, every day, nonstop. But I tried to find a compromise with Mice and Mystics. But what's interesting is, like, it's really overly complicated, I think. And I'm kind of wondering if Stuffed Fables is the same way. I've heard that it's not, but I guess I'm curious what your comparison between the two would be.
I think Stuffed Fables mechanically is a refined Mice and Mystics with a little bit of Dead of Winter kind of built into it. So they use some of the Crossroad card mentality, but I think it's just a better system than Mice and Mystics. Like, it works a lot better the way they've integrated the choose your own adventure kind of story nature of the board. I really haven't found a bad part of Stuffed Fables yet. I've been pretty impressed.
It's on my list. So for anybody listening, just look up my Amazon wish list.
Yeah, there you go. What do your kids think of your games?
So our games are a little bit older than our kids. So our older two have played Commissioned, and they enjoyed that. And then our oldest has played Unauthorized. The new game, Soul of the Empire, it's above where they're at right now. So, Chris, if you like meaty strategy style games, Soul of the Empire is straight up your alley. But our kids just aren't there yet. What they have played is the game that we haven't mentioned yet, which is Three Seeds. It's a basic light strategy card game. You're kind of managing short-term point collection versus long-term set collection. And that one they can play because it's very simple to learn. Plays in about 40 minutes. They've played that one as well, and they enjoy that one. But a lot of the time, you know, we just sit down and we have a basket that we all write down games that we want to play, and then we pull games out of the basket. We play those as a family. So trying to work our way through our collection.
Yeah. How often do you guys play games together as a family?
I'd say probably once or twice a week.
Are you adopting?
If you come to town, you can play games with us once or twice a week. No problem.
Nice. That sounds fun. I'll come as well. You can adopt me as well.
So don't invite yourself. That's rude.
It's what we do as an extended family now, too. Whenever we get together with either Kat's family or my family, I mean, we get together and we play games. It's how we relax and have fun. So we are certainly enjoying it. All kinds of different stuff.
Yeah. And you mentioned before you're in the military and, you know, I think Kat said you're hopeful to retire in the somewhat near future.
Sometime in the next 10 years.
Yeah. Do you, when that day comes, are you going to devote yourself full time to making games? Where do you see your game making future?
Yeah, I think that's the plan right now. We're trying to do one or two games a year to kind of build up our company's, you know, portfolio and make all the necessary, industry connections. You know, we went to Toy Fair this year to try to expand that profile. We're doing some things to reach out to the homeschooling markets because we have some natural tie-ins there because we homeschool our kids. But yeah, I mean, ultimately when I retire, we would like to be in a place where we can go into full-time game design and convention attendance and do this thing you know, as well as can possibly be done. But that's, it's just going to take time to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Well, I've played Unauthorized. I haven't played your other games. I know Chris has played Commissioned.
I have a signed copy, suckers.
Yeah. So, anyway, I really appreciate you guys' approach to making games. I think they're really well done. They're really thoughtful. I'm excited about Soul of the Empire. There's a Kickstarter campaign for it, right?
Yep.
Going on right now. We're halfway through our campaign and we're at about 80% funding. So we're very excited. It looks like we're on track to make it.
Nice. Cool. So people can go check that out. Just search for Soul of the Empire on Kickstarter. And then your website is charagames.com. Is that right? Kara. Yep. I always want to say
C-H-A-R-A.
You know, what's funny too, is that, I took like 18 hours of Greek.
Wow, dude.
So
I took a semester of Greek and got a B and I don't remember anything.
Well,
it's funny because we debated, because when you do the translation from the Greek to the English, you can spell Kara with a C-H, right, with a K, or with an X. And so we had to decide, how do we want to spell it? And we decided on the C-H because
what it puts us higher in the alphabet. What is the percentage of people that say it wrong? Give a number.
It's high. Like... 95%.
I think you'd have that same.
Usually it's the people with Greek dollars.
I got it wrong the first time.
Right,
you'd have that same problem if you spelled it with an X.
Oh, for sure.
The only way to solve it would be with K. And I don't know. I don't know. That's necessarily better.
Kara.
And then it would be Kara.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Lose.
Yeah.
Just close it up.
Yeah. Yeah. You could do C-A-R-A, but then that wouldn't really. Nobody alliterates that anyway. That's all there is. We're getting nerdy here.
Took a deep dive on that.
But where else can people find you on the internet? Are you guys on Twitter or anything?
We are on Twitter at Kara Games or at Facebook at Facebook/Kara Games. And we'd love to engage with anyone out there who has questions about what we're doing or why we're doing it. We're very excited, obviously, about the Kickstarter that's going, but Commissioned is also selling well and getting reprinted again. So we're very excited for how things are going and just appreciate the opportunity to let your audience know what's
absolutely.
Going on.
Absolutely. Well, we're happy to let our audience know about your games. We would wholeheartedly recommend people go check those out and go support the Kickstarter if there's still time. I guess that's it for us here. We would really appreciate it if you would go to iTunes, and rate and review our podcast. Search for Love Thy Nerd on iTunes. And the Humans of Gaming podcast is one of our podcasts in the Love Thy Nerd podcast network. Go rate and review it. Give it 5 stars. Tell people it's awesome. Spread the word on Facebook, Twitter, whatever social media you use about the podcast. We would greatly appreciate it. Go to Facebook and search for Love Thy Nerd if you want to join our community and follow everything that's going on with Love Thy Nerd, because there are a lot of things going on. We're working as hard as we can to start a website and to get some things in the works. And if you want to follow all of that, join our group on Facebook. And I was just thinking about something you said earlier about all those people that just stepped up and said like, hey, I want to help you with artwork. And hey, I want to help you with this different aspect of your game. If you're out there going like, hey, I want to help Love Thy Nerd in some way, I have this to offer. You can email me or Chris. Like
if you've Drew just at got Love a, Thy Nerd, Chris you got Love a bag Nerd. Of cash and you're like, hey, I want to help. That's a great way. But, you know, other things, too.
Yeah, definitely if you have the bag of cash.
Love bags of cash.
I can give you my PayPal. thanks so much, guys, for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
LTN Rewind, a classic pulled from the Love Thy Nerd archives.